in him. With the bases loaded, an intentional walk to Barry Bonds.
2-2 with the bases loaded and one out.
Oh my God.
Deep to right field. Way.
What is going on, everybody? Episode 181. Welcome into Bases Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Kurland. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Kurland, and joined by my compadre, my partner in crime, whatever you want to call him. I try to come up with something new every so often because we just don't podcast as often as we used to, right? So I try to be unique every time, George. Welcome in. You can follow George on Twitter at @Roto_Nino. This is Bases Loaded of the Gaining the Edge GTE Fantasy. That's right.
Yeah, GTE now, Gaining the Edge.
We are GTE.
Man, it's been a while. It's been a while, but after a nice little break here, we're back in it, back drafting. I mean, is there no better time of the year?
I mean
draft season.
It's not draft season. We made it draft season.
It's draft season for some, for degenerates like us.
I like calling it. I like saying tis the season because instead of the holidays, it's tis the season to be drafting. And that's what we're doing. And we're going to just discuss why we draft early, because it's not for everybody. I'm very aware. We're both very aware. This is not something for everyone. People don't like drafting this early. There's a lot of risk. There's also a reward. But for us as analysts, drafting early benefits us on that side of things as much as it does just, you know, the fact that we enjoy drafting early and playing. And it's a content thing too. But I think we should discuss the benefits of the pros and cons of drafting early. Some of the players we do like. Early on, players that we've missed out on that we want to probably get in on in the early rounds, because we can't give away all of our secrets, because people listening right now are playing, probably facing us in these drafts. So I don't want to give them all of our players.
It's true.
So I want to discuss some of the players that I've been targeting in the early rounds, guys that I'm really in on, and I feel like you obviously have names as well, and why we feel it's important to be drafting early. So before we get started, though, don't forget to check us out. Speaking of gaining the edge, you can gain the edge with us all offseason long with our GTE Patreon. Look at that. That's pro podcast.
Real right pro right there. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't. I had to ruin it by calling it out because it's so corny. I can't do it. But our Patreon, it's patreon.com/GTE, the letters GTE Fantasy. Come check us out. We have a Discord. We're getting our content going. We just in our group set up our we're going to do our group rankings, our consensus rankings. We're getting those going. Simeon already has his SP ranks up. I know you have your RP ranks working. Me and Bubba both have catcher ranks done. So we're spread apart, but we're slowly coming together. We're going to knock out a few positions here weekly. Plus, we have some roundtable discussions we're getting started on, positionals and all that. So we're here to help you guys out through the whole offseason. Plus, not to mention, for those drafting early, I do have a list of names that I'm like targets and like high end, some guys at the very end of drafts going outside the top like 600 ADP for reference of how deep I'm reaching here, to give you just an idea of guys you can get in the final 10 rounds of these draft champions, which are draft and hold formats. And I'm going to be giving out all this information and more among the other four of us with Bubba, Simeone, George, and whatnot. So we have a lot going on this offseason, but yeah, GTE Fantasy Patreon, check it out. So drafting early, what do you think is let's start with the good. Let's be positive. Let's start the month off positive. It's December 1st. What good comes from drafting early?
Yeah. Well, I mean, drafting early is really just like the first really good opportunity to like really dive into the player pool, right? And so a lot of times you're in like the 15th, 16th, 17th plus round, and you're coming across names that maybe you would have never considered or didn't think it, you know, maybe they had some positive underlying numbers, maybe they had like a sneaky good season. But just running into these players that maybe you wouldn't have considered or didn't really think about, and finding little nuggets here and there. I mean, so I think it's just a really good way to start, you know, diving into the player pool and start getting all your information on these players and identifying these guys that you want to target late that, you know, could be potential values and stuff, potential breakouts. So yeah, I mean, and then there's also a lot of uncertainty right now. So guys like Jose Abreu, who just signed with the Astros, I mean, he was going at, I think, ADP like around 125. And so, you know, if you're drafting early and taking advantage of that, I mean, you've got a pretty good steal there, because you probably need to take him up at least about 40 picks earlier now, you know, in that 6th round range in 15 teamers to to get any Jose Abreu now with the Astros. So yeah, a lot of pros. I mean, there's also, you know, there's some risk too. I mean, there's going to be some player movement. There's going to be, you know, some closers that we're drafting that we think are closers that won't be closers. You know, Kenley Jansen, I think, you know, he's probably going to take someone's job
again.
right. Exactly. Yeah, there's pros and cons, but I think for me, this is the biggest benefit is just really getting to know the player pool and just diving into all this information that we have.
My favorite part is that ADP, people like us are creating it. It was actually in place before we started drafting because there are degenerates drafting. But you have to remember, ADP is literally us players creating it. So it is a tool, not a rule. I want to stress that because people, it's really, I just get your guy, GYG, get your guy. Don't let the ADP dictate your moves because a player going at pick 300 might be worth pick 200. It doesn't mean you have to reach for him at pick 200, but if you're on 250 and you're afraid he won't make it to you, you're probably not alone. So you know, don't be afraid to jump the 50 picks because you're reaching. And I'm saying that with quotes as if you can see me through the microphone, but or through the podcast. But yeah, it's frustrating. I'm trying to look up. Let's look at the last 2 weeks. I'm looking at the last 2 weeks of ADP to reference your Jose Abreu. It looks like there's been 18. I got format matters this early in the year. But the last 2 weeks, and, he hasn't gone up. Let's see last week. The move happened about a week ago, right? It's been not even a week.
I don't think it's been a weekend. So a lot of drafts probably haven't finished. Yeah. Unless there's like a lot of these gladiator drafts. What do you think about these gladiator drafts? Have you done any?
No, but they sound like a lot of fun. And I think what they do is they put an emphasis on health and reliability of a player. So it's going to be a completely different build. And that's actually going to mess up the ADP data in these early drafts. Because I think if you look at gladiators compared to, say, draft champions, you're going to see certain players move up and down based on how you have to build a team. People might be more aggressive. Closers are already really aggressive in both formats. You have to be. So, right. Yeah. There's only been one draft that's completed. I know mine was one of them that just completed today. Abreu went 128 in that draft in draft champions. So right. We don't have the ADP data to back it up. I do know the one draft I'm in now, Abreu went, I think, just inside the top 100 or around like 90th or maybe 80th overall. I have to double check it, but it's going to climb and it should. Abreu just entered one of the best lineups in baseball, likely right in the middle of it at that, surrounded by the best cast of players he's ever played with in a very favorable, at least the pool side is favorable with the Crawford boxes. So obviously,
really good move.
Now I think the discussion should be, because you saw Vinny Pascatino going around pick 90. Would you take Jose Abreu above him now?
Yeah, I've just wrapped up my third gladiator, and like you said, those are really fun to knock out. Like, just really good idea, excellent price point, like $50, 15 teams. You just draft your 23 starters, and it's essentially best ball from there. And it's a great way to, like, you know, really diversify and take a look at every player, because if you're knocking a lot of these drafts out, that's exactly what you want to do, is just spread yourself out and diversify in these. And I actually took Abreu around 85, just ahead of Vinny. I think just, you know, given the lineup context, I mean, there's so much to love about Vinny P. I mean, he's going to be one of the breakouts this year. I think he's going to be excellent. But I mean, with Abreu, I mean, just given the lineup context, I mean, the guy can probably lead the league in RBI. I mean, you take a look at his stats. I mean, despite, what is he like, 30, going to be 36? Yeah, going to be entering his age 36 season. There's really not much here that you could point to that say, like, you know, there's a decline coming. I mean, the strikeout rate was excellent, 16%, hit 304. But really, the only thing is he just had some bad luck with home runs. He actually had more barreled balls at 47 than he did in 2021. He had 44 barreled balls in 2021, 47 last year, but he had half the homers. So I definitely think that he's going to bounce back. And if I'm in that range, that sixth, seventh round range, and I'm choosing between Vinny P and Abreu, like I might take Abreu in two drafts and take Vinny like in a third. I think that's the perfect range right there for those two guys. And I think just given the lineup context, I'll give the lean to Abreu.
Yeah, so I think, and that's Jose Abreu you spoke about right there. And yes, Jose Abreu is definitely a guy that I'm giving him the edge here in this discussion. But going back to Vinny P, because it's just easier to say Vinny P than butchering the last name. I know I'll do a couple times, but I want to discuss just real quick, because I just happened to look last night and tweeted about it, so I have the stuff in front of me. Vinny P, the reason why you should buy in, at least why I'm buying in, he flashed the power, you know, 87th percentile max exit velocity, but then he pairs, and that's just one of the metrics to go, and he actually had a good hard hit rate as well. But he also flashed elite contact skills. We're talking 92% Z contact. That's up there with some of the best hitters in baseball, but he does mm-hmm. that while having power potential, which that combination you don't see a lot. So right there is already kind of a unicorn skill set in terms of being, he could be that guy that, I don't want to say he has that ceiling of a Pete Alonso. I know the power can get there. I just don't know if I trust it in that ballpark type of thing. So I'm afraid to put that type of level of power comp there, but I think the 30 home runs is realistic, but 30 home runs and hitting 300, that's like that's probably a 90th percentile outcome, but I think that's within the realm of realistic outcomes though. So that's why I can't put those numbers, because obviously that would make him a third round pick. But I think because he has that ceiling, that this discussion should happen for Vinny P. So anyway, pairing that power potential with that elite contact ability, Vinny P already grabbed my attention. Obviously, he does that while having like a better than league average chase rate and swinging strike rate. So you have the contact, the plus contact, the plus power, the plus eye at the plate, which led to elite, you know, plate discipline as a whole. And this is stuff that he did in the minor leagues that led into the majors, and it'll help him age well and help him transition well. So then the bad, if you want to look at, if there's anything bad, and the reason why I say the bad is because you have to figure, there's not everything, he's not perfect basically. And you have to at least think about these things a little bit. It's a limited MLB sample. So all these things I just mentioned were based on like what, 300, a little over 300 plate appearances total. I think pitchers will have time to adjust to now. Not that Vinny won't be able to adjust to that pitching adjustment, but pitchers should be adjusting for him. He's going to be one of the best hitters on a mediocre offense. I think the offense might be being overlooked. It's really solid, young, and up and coming. You know, you have Sal Perez, MJ Melendez, Witt. You know, it's not a bad offense. It just lacks depth, and they could address that. We'll see what they do here in the offseason to get some veteran help around them. Or maybe some of these other guys, you know, the Kyle Isbells of the world, and you know what, Olivares. They have all these guys that kind of show flashes in chunks here and there. I digress, as always. So limited MLB sample, which again, I'm just giving you reasons to think. When I say the bad, again, I'm giving you reasons to possibly second guess some of this stuff. Pitchers will adjust, and then the bad ballpark. Those are the only real three things. And the fact that I'm just finding reasons to question it, and not even question it, just giving you the counter arguments. Am I personally concerned about those three things? Not a lot. They are something to keep in the back of your mind, but not something I would be overly concerned about with Vinny. So Vinny P, yeah. I think I'm with you. I do like him to break out this year, and I'm going around where he's going. I think the price is just right, because you're getting him kind of where his floor should be, but you know there's a ceiling there that he can outproduce that price range. So I do think he'll be a riser as we get closer, because I don't think people realize that first base kind of falls off. It's decent, but it's not that great. I'm finding myself getting Rhys Hoskins a lot, because I find him and Rizzo being the end of this kind of tier where the batting average, I don't know how Rizzo's interesting, because the shift could work in his favor, even though the shift hasn't been a limiting factor the last few years from what I've seen. But you just never know how the shift could, you know, figure into helping him, because he's another guy with that elite plate discipline, Rizzo is. So elite plate discipline, able, and he pulls the ball, and he's staying in New York, so that's another positive, good lineup spot. So Rizzo, and then Reese is just Reese, you know, 30 home runs, going to bat close to 250, 240. You kind of know what you're getting, but 30 home runs in today's game is not that common. So I feel like those two guys kind of end up this kind of upper tiers of first baseman. And those are guys I find myself targeting a lot, because I don't like to attack first base because the other guys are going way earlier. And I keep missing on Vinny P, and it's pissing me off. So I'm kind of giving you these things of guys I target, guys I want to get in future drafts. And Vinny P's Vinny P's a guy I've whiffed on. Him and Abreu are guys I've whiffed on to this point that I want to get. So I will make sure I get them in drafts in the future. But it's just frustrating because I've missed them to this point. And just it's because of how I've been building my teams out, where I'm prioritizing outfield and third base sooner. And then obviously I got to address closers and starting pitchers and 15 teamers. Next thing you know, if you're addressing all these other things you prioritize first, you're missing out on these upper elite talent types at other positions, or potential for elite talent at other positions. So real quick, before we move on to other things I want to address with drafting early, I do want to discuss, I agree with you with it forces you to look into players earlier than you might. Most people right now are kind of enjoying the offseason, the downtime. But right now, our prep is in full force, and that's only going to make us better and help us give you more information, you, the listener. I think prep and familiarization coming from drafting early, not only is it forcing you to look into players more, but looking into team context more, projecting playing time more. You look at teams, and we'll get into that more, but like 40-man, I think 40-man rosters are huge, and that's where I'm getting a lot of these guys at the end of drafts. I'm looking at 40-man rosters of players on bad teams. And what I'm trying to do is I'm thinking, well, this team's probably going to end up being traded. This team's going to be a seller. This team's going to be a buyer. And if these teams are sellers, these guys on the 40-man that have upside that played most of their year in the upper minors, maybe got a cup of coffee, these are guys that have path to playing time via injury, via early call-up, or via trade. And those are guys that this is why I'm looking at teams 40-man so closely. And I think by getting my eyes on 40-man rosters here, again, in November, entering December, it gives me this edge in these deeper formats, as in I know what guys I want to target, hitters, pitchers, whatever. There's these guys that just, it makes sense to give them a chance that late because they have a chance to be difference making at parts of the season. Whereas if I drafted correctly, I won't need them right away. So there's a little bit of, you got to kind of try to project forward here. And I think that monitoring 40-man moves and, you know, players that were held back from the Rule 5 draft and players that are about to be selected in the Rule 5 draft, these are guys that are going to be, you know, again, it goes back to kind of volatility. We saw Stone Garrett get signed by the Nationals. He was a guy that I wasn't targeting at all, but I just made sure I got him in the 45th round of our draft because he was still there. My pick was 3 picks away. And I'm like, now he has, I didn't think he was going to get picked up by a team that had a path to playing time. Now suddenly he has a clear path to playing time, and we know the tools are there for Stone Garrett. So that's the type of stuff I'm factoring early in the deep rounds here. And then obviously the downside of drafting early, you're going to miss on some, you mentioned it, news is going to break, trades are going to happen, signings are going to happen. Values are going to go up or down. If you were lucky enough to hit on them because you projected it forward, you hit big, but you can miss on a lot of them. And now you have to draft to make up for lost time. Like, oh man, now I got to make sure I get this guy. But now so is everybody else. And injuries, obviously the big one, injury risk way up. Drafting now, you know, like there's going to be a Chris Sale this year. There's going to be a insert player, Mike Trout, insert player here that gets hurt and misses a good part of the year. You have to hope that it's not your guy. Cause I'm one of my guys, man. One of my guys I'm targeting a ton, Eloy Jimenez. And I'll talk about him a little bit, but
I've gotten him in a couple of drafts too. Yeah.
So this is the Eloy. I've been fading him for years and I finally got Eloy. But I've been talking enough. Let's transition over to closers. You're the closer guy. How are you attacking closers in early drafts? Again, format is different. If we're talking about redraft in terms of like what waiver wire, daily ads, fab, I think you and I will agree in terms of drafting closers different, but we're talking specifically draft champions leagues and these early leagues where that there's no roster moves and all that. So let's discuss what we are drafting and how you're attacking closers in these formats.
Yeah. So like you said, it is kind of format dependent, and some of it goes back to, like you mentioned first base really falling off. And I feel like it's the same could be said for just about every position. And I don't think it's so much that there are less, like fewer like quality players to be found in the later rounds, but it's the playing time that is harder to find in the later rounds. And so, in the one DC I've drafted, I did get an early closer. So I still want that early solid, you could project 30 saves with good ratios and strikeouts. I still want one of those guys. I don't know if I'm paying up for like Diaz and Class A in like DCs. But I do want, at least like a Jordan Romano. I'll even take a Kenley Jansen. He's pretty much guaranteed to close no matter where he signs. Camilo Doval, we did hear some rumors about the Giants potentially being interested in Kenley Jansen, but To be honest, I don't really see that happening. So I do still want that one anchor as a closer, and then I'll take some gambles later because I'm finding it really hard to pull the trigger on two early closers, at least in these DCs, because like I said, like the later you get, it's harder to find playing time as far as the position players go. And so I'm taking one early closer, and then I'm taking gambles on someone like David Robertson, who, closed for the Cubs, closed for the Phillies. So, it's likely that wherever he signs, he's going to have a decent chance at picking up saves. Maybe Jorge Lopez, who he really struggled down the stretch with the Twins, but just their pattern, over the last several years is you know, really having their best pitcher just being their high leverage, you know, fireman guy in the seventh, eighth inning. I think maybe Joan Duran could, you know, remain in that role for, you know, maybe 75% of the season, and maybe he gets a dozen saves, but, you know, Jorge Lopez could end up being that guy that, you know, maybe he gets 20 for the Twins. So yeah, I'm taking gambles here and there later, but pretty much, yeah, just trying to get locked down that one early closer. Now in the Gladiators, I am taking two early closers, because you do want to secure those saves in the Gladiators, because you're only drafting 23 rounds. And so if I can lock up 60 saves early on, and then, you know, where like in this last Gladiator I did take like Jansen and Iglesias. And if the Braves re-sign Jansen, I mean, then that's going to blow up on me. But I think there's a good chance that he signs elsewhere. But then, yeah, later on in the draft, I was, you know, loading up on starting pitching. And then I was getting guys who I think have a pretty good chance at just getting playing time instead of, you know, maybe trying to chase 8 to 10 saves. I'm, you know, getting guys like Jaime Candelario, who's going to get a good chance at, you know, just getting full playing time there at third base with the Nationals, or Mike Yastrzemski really late. So, yeah, and those Gladiators, I'm definitely locking down two early ones.
It's funny because I'm such a wimp when it comes to closers. I play so scared. I text you guys. I text our group chat about it all the time. Like, I am afraid to not have two closers, like two PLAs I trust as closers. So I am paying up for closers, but I trust this goes back to, you could tell what our niches are. This goes back to me trusting my forward thinking with playing time. I like to gamble on guys like Max Kepler late, Nolan Jones. These are guys that are dead, and these are guys that are on your bench that if the playing time is there, which it should be for Kepler specifically, the benefit of, he should benefit from the shift being taken away, because that plate discipline is still elite. He should be healthy. He's a guy that's like one of those sleepers types that I'm getting every draft as a reserve pick. Yoan Moncada, I have him on a draft or two just because he's falling, and he's my reserve third baseman. He's not even my corner. So it's like, I'm targeting playing time, and guys that are going to be at least strong side platoon guys, I don't mind taking a bunch of those guys later just to secure saves. But David Robertson, it's funny you mentioned, because I think I got him in our league, and I'm pretty sure I have him in 100% of my league so far. So 2 for 2. And he's top of my queue in the NFBC 50, which is a 12 team version of a draft and hold, and he's gonna be my first bench reliever if I get him. And so there's already, like, I'm already, see what I feel like what I haven't done enough is prioritize speed. I feel like I am, but then at the end of the day, I feel like speed's gonna go up this year with the new rules. So I'm not overemphasizing it. I'm actually more worried about power. And honestly, with platoons becoming the thing that they are, give me playing time, and I feel like the rest will fall into place. Like, I'm drafting skill sets, don't get me wrong, but I'm realizing that almost every team has a platoon batter too, between the corner infield and the middle infield or the utility. And these days, like I think I told you guys how much, like, I love Jock Peterson. Yeah, he's in a platoon, so you have to pay extra close attention to schedules, but look how good he was even in a part-time role, and while missing time and injury at that. So you have to just be mindful that platoons aren't what they used to be in terms of being a death sentence for a player. If anything, you have to learn to kind of be okay with them because of just how, especially in deeper leagues, because of how frequent we see platoons. But back to closers. Yeah, I'm just attacking them early. I'm taking one in the top three rounds every draft so far. No regrets, because it's frustrating. Like, I want to try not doing that, but I know I'll regret it, because I know I don't have confidence in my, like, I'm getting a lot of Joe Jimenez after pick 500 just on the off chance. But yeah, that's about it. And starters and hitters, real quick, I just want to touch on these real briefly, mostly starters. How is the shift affecting your thought process with starters? Me personally, I'm just attacking aces. I'm attacking guys with high K potential, because depending on the ground ball types, unless they have elite defenses like the Cardinals usually do, so like a Jordan Montgomery, I would have no problem going after him. But like, I'm more, give me the guys with the strikeout potential, because I don't trust ground ball pitchers now that the shift what you would think was helping them won't be as helpful now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not reading too much into it as far as like maybe the guys in like the top 10 rounds or so. I think if they're good pitchers, they're good pitchers, they're going to continue to be good pitchers. Like, I'm not going to knock like a Sandy Alcantara down, you know, too low because of the shift ban. But yeah, if I'm maybe like in my SP4 SP5 range, I'm probably looking a little bit more for strikeouts instead of, you know, just volume ratios. Like, is this the year that the surface stats finally match the peripherals with someone like Marcus Stroman because of the change in the defense? So maybe I'm targeting like Reed Detmers, Ronzi Contreras, Brian Bayo. So yeah, it's not changing my thinking too much, like at the top, but yeah, maybe like in the mid to lower tier starting pitchers, I'm definitely probably looking for more like strikeout upside.
Yeah, that's pretty much the differences there. And then same thing with closers. Like, I'm avoiding closers like that could be really bad. And like, you know, I'm trying to think of a name, somebody that gets picked up from like the Rockies to close, but isn't really a good closer. I'm afraid that they're going to be just that much worse. You know what I mean? Like, one of those subpar guys, like those relief pitchers that you're grabbing them just because they're in the situation, like a Mark Melancon type. If someone like that got a spot this year, I'm kind of avoiding that type altogether. But
yeah.
other than that, is there anybody? I gave a couple names in terms of like Vinny P and Abreu in the early rounds. I feel the need to make sure I get a couple shares of that I haven't yet. Is there anybody like that stands out to you?
You know, not necessarily. I think what I found that I didn't do enough last year was diversify. I found, you know, I had a lot of the same guys. And so yeah, I had a lot of Jazz Chisholm, a lot of Jonathan India, a lot of guys that, you know, kind of burned me in the early rounds. So I'm trying to diversify a little bit. And then I have some targets later. Like around 9, 10, I'm really liking William Contreras at catcher. I've pretty much drafted him as one of my top two catchers in almost every draft I've done so far. I think he's excellent. He could be like, he can pretty much be like not all that different from like a Will Smith. I mean, he was going like 100 picks earlier. I
think he has similar power potential, if not more. It's the swing and miss you have to be concerned about. That's about it with him.
They clearly want to get.
Power is legit, yeah. Though, man. The power is like the metrics are off the chart, especially for a catcher.
Maybe MJ Melendez is a little more better comp. Just because, I mean, Melendez is going a little closer to his range too, but maybe around pick 100. But William Contreras going like 40, 50 picks later can pretty much just be the same guy, if not better, better lineup. And you know, the similar to like Melendez, I mean, the Braves, they played Contreras at DH. They played him in left field. I mean, they clearly want to keep his bat in the lineup. So, I mean, just the fact that Travis d'Arnaud's still there doesn't really concern me all that much. I do think that Contreras like has a chance to eclipse, like he's projected for like 440, 450 plate appearances, but I think he can eclipse 500 plate appearances. And I think with that, you're definitely going to get, you know, over 20 homers and some pretty good counting stats in that lineup. So yeah, I've found him to be like one of my big targets at the catcher position. Other than that, no one that I'm really locking into all that much that I'm getting like at every draft, just trying to diversify a bit. I think it's mainly starting pitching that I know where my targets are, like later in the round. Like I've mentioned, like Reed Detmers, he's someone that I really like that you could draft as like an SP5. Really showed, like, you know, once he got demoted like in June, came back in July, and from that point on just really increased that slider usage, and the velo on the slider was going up month by month too, and I think he had like a 3 ERA from that point on with like over 9 K per 9, and even in the, like, he had a few bumps in September, but he still maintained like a 13% swing and strike rate through that time. So I think like he's someone that I really like getting like around that pick 220, 230 range.
Yeah, so I'm glad you gave me a name, but we're gonna have to do a whole podcast just on some of these targets. But I think that's gonna do it for this one, though. This was just the idea, just to talk a little bit about early drafting, the pros and cons, discuss some players along the way, and it's always fun, George. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter, George at @Roto_Nino. I'm at @Mike_Curlin. Check out the Patreon at patreon.com/GTEFantasy. You would think I would know this by now, but obviously I suck. Until next time, though, we appreciate everyone listening, and we'll talk to you soon.